Hi, welcome to the 13th Warehouse. I'm Vicki.
And I'm Ken.
And this is Doug with the IMDb Synopsis, Season 1, Episode 11, Nevermore. The Warehouse team narrowly misses nabbing McPherson. Micah's father falls under the influence of an artifact that resists the purple goo. Created by Brent Mote and Jane Espenson, written by David Simpkins and staff writer Benjamin Robb, directed by Tanya McKiernan, and the original air date was September 15th, 2009.
Where is he? Where's McPherson?
He's gone, Artie. I lost him.
I lost McPherson.
Hi, we're back, and as you heard in the recap, this is Season 1, Episode 11, Nevermore. The artifact of the week is Edgar Allan Poe's quill, pen, and notebook. When separated, loss of sanity and drainage of life force, an indirect weapon creation of words, but when combined, they give the user the ability to make whatever they write come true. Does that even make sense?
I don't remember him writing, though.
Yeah, neither do I. I don't remember him writing anything either, but...
Okay, oh, but they were never combined for them to write, though.
Yes, he was writing. The kid was writing notes. He was writing fire, wall.
Yeah, you're right.
So, okay, that doesn't make sense. There's two other artifacts in this episode, and we'll talk about them when we get to them. So we finally meet Micah's parents. And fun fact, although I've seen these two actors in a lot of other things, I remember them also playing husband and wife in a Hallmark Christmas movie, The Christmas Secret. So while I was looking up The Christmas Movie, because I couldn't remember the name of the movie, I remember the movie, but I couldn't remember the name of it, I realized that they're actually married in real life.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
So his name is Michael Hogan and hers is Susan Hogan. I thought that was cute.
Yeah, that was cute.
I geek out over weird things.
No, I like that, though.
So the hunt for McPherson continues. We start with Micah and Pete in different locations, which doesn't usually happen, searching for him. And McPherson uses some kind of symbol artifact to get away from Pete. And again, from Wiki Warehouse, the supersonic symbols are finger-sized instruments. When struck together, the symbol resonates with a high-pitched sound that shatters glass, shorts out electrical features, and kills people whose ears aren't covered. I guess already told Pete in time to cover his ears. That's why he didn't die. Then Micah hears that her father's dying, so she tells them that she has to go home. And we've already seen that he received a book in the mail, and he's interacting with an artifact. Mrs. Frederick reads Artie the Riot Act for once again not following protocol because he was supposed to gather information and give it to them instead of sending his agents out to him.
God, do that. Mrs. Frederick, what'd you do with Lena? You're here because you want to know what happened.
Two policemen dead, Arthur. I know what happened. The Montreal police have a dashboard camera in the car.
But I told Pete he had the recording. How did you...
Please.
Look, we were following a lead.
You took a shot in the dark.
We hit the center of that target.
With a small caliber bullet.
Pete's caliber is very large. You know what? I'm done with this analogy.
She mentions the first 12 warehouses, which I think we probably imagined there were more warehouses, but we never heard that there were more warehouses up until this point, I don't think.
No, we haven't heard about another warehouse, but I know we have heard about other agents.
Right. So apparently there were 12 other warehouses before this one.
Manage my assets better, or I swear on the ashes of the first 12 warehouses, I will take them away.
Where they were, we don't know yet. I do believe we hear about a couple of them as the series goes on, but I don't really remember. So the other side of the story is there's a kid who's being bullied, and he's hearing whispers from an Edgar Allan Poe display. Micah's father is being affected by the book, and Bobby, the bullied kid, is being affected by the quill. It goes without saying that any time a bullied kid gets their hands on an artifact or something of the sort, like in other shows, like spells or magic items, it's not going to go well.
Nope.
So Claudia gets to leave the warehouse, I think maybe for the first time.
Yeah, you're right.
She goes to the bookstore to bring the purple goo to Pete and Micah. But she also gets to go on a mission with Pete later when they go to find the quill.
To the, school.
And I think this is her first time ever out of the warehouse that I could remember. So when they put the book in the goo, there's no sparks. Artie tells them they have to bring the two parts together. And then they also, at some point, realize that McPherson is behind sending the book. And they figure it's probably a diversion for something else.
Mm-hmm.
To keep them busy while he does whatever he's going to do.
Pete and Mike are in Colorado Springs.
Yeah, I know. I should have tried.
And so is McPherson.
What? How did he... He was there the whole time.
He had us all distracted. I think that was McPherson's intent.
It also seems like her father is seeing everything Bobby is doing to get back at his bullies.
Right. It seems like when the father was reading from the book, something generated with Bobby.
Yeah. I couldn't tell if they were doing things on their own or if he was seeing what Bobby was doing or if he was making Bobby do it by reading the book. I couldn't tell how that worked.
Part of me say it was reading the book, because when Michael read the book that he wrote, things started to change. So it seemed like even though they weren't connected, somewhere along the line, they connected person to person like in the book. Whatever one did, the other one kind of felt it.
Yeah, that's what I got too. But I wasn't sure if because of the connection, I'm not explaining it right, and you probably just explained it. Because of the connection that whatever Micah's father was reading was what was making Bobby do what he did, but I'm not sure. Right? I think they were working as two separate entities, but they were connected.
Right, because it seemed like when he really started reading the book, that's when it seemed like it got stronger.
Yeah.
He kept on hearing the whispers, but once he started reading, that's when he smashed the glass to get to the pen. Because
right.
He started reading it. And then it seemed like the more he got angry and, you know, upset. But I still couldn't figure out, why did he put the teacher in the wall?
The only reason I know of is the teacher knew he stole the quill.
Oh, okay. I understand. Okay.
That seemed to be the only reason for me that I could figure out.
So that's the teacher that was helping him. He gave him the book. So I thought they had a good connection there. And then I was like, well, what happens? I must have blanked out on that part.
Yeah, there was a part where the teacher said the quill is missing. He basically accused him of stealing it without accusing him.
Mm-hmm.
And the teacher said, I'm going to go to the teacher's lounge, and if the quill shows up, no questions asked. But instead, he gave him the note that said wall and put him in the wall. I remember reading a lot of Edgar Allan Poe when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I do remember the villain traps his friend in a wall.
Oh.
So, and then the fire was supposed to be, I think, about the short story, The Black Cat. But there was another story of Edgar Poe. And I think Pete says it. Does he say it? The Telltale Heart?
Is that the one with the boar where the heart just keeps on beating?
Yes. Do you remember that one?
I remember seeing it in the movie. I don't think I read it.
The guy chopped up whoever this was. I can't even remember the specifics because I was a kid and that was a long time ago. And he put all the pieces in the floorboard, but he could hear the heart beating.
Right, yeah.
I'm almost positive Pete mentioned that too during the episode, but I'm not sure. So, like you said, Artie tells Micah to read to her father to slow the progression while they look for the other part. There was a very nice moment while she was reading to him. This is even before she read his book.
Yeah.
That he apologized for not being a father.
Yeah.
And her mother tells her that he has regrets. And then she tells her about the book that he wrote that he was so obsessed with that he finally told her to burn it. But Micah figures out that her mother probably didn't burn her father's book. And she begins to read that to him. And she realizes the book is about him becoming a father and her.
Yeah.
Which was nice.
It was nice.
The Blue Willow Sky by Warren Barry. Chapter 1. When the girl was born, his first thought was fear. For her. For his daughter. She was his life. His only job now was keeping her safe. She was his life.
It's working, Micah.
Words
have power.
So reading it makes all the writing on his skin return to the book, and Claudia is able to bag it.
Well, they had to put the pen.
Right. That's right. I'm skipping it. Yeah. So reading it makes all the writing return to the book. And it makes Bobby drop the pen at the school.
Yeah.
Because they're connected, but it's not totally over until they're back together. So he drops the pen and Claudia could bag it. I imagine the pendulum is another story of Poe, but I don't know that one.
Yeah.
So they put the pen and the book together and everybody's cured and they think it's over. So it was nice that Micah finally got her father's approval. He's one of those people. His way of showing his concern or his love for his daughter is to tell her that she's too skinny and worrying about whether she eats or not.
Right.
Do you have guns in the house? You know what I mean.
Yes.
That's his way of showing concern, but it's just a constant barrage of everything that he thinks is wrong with her, which is probably not the way he means it, but it's the way his concern comes out.
Yeah, like he's criticized
it. Right. But I don't think he always means it to be critical.
But that's how it comes out.
I think that's his way of showing her he worries about her. But yes, exactly. It comes out as criticism.
Wasted trip, kiddo. You bring a gun in here?
Yeah, it's packed downstairs, disassembled.
Jeannie, get the girl some food.
I'm not hungry.
It's because you've starved your hunger nerve to death.
You're too skinny.
Miss Independent.
Seriously, Dad, I've been here for like, what, a minute?
It's touchy, too.
Oh, please, Warren.
I've got to go down to the basement. Eat something.
I'm not hungry.
So it was good that she always knows she has her father's approval. She always did, but she didn't know it.
Right, yeah.
So, as predicted, this was all a diversion, and he was using her appearance to create a distraction. When they figure out McPherson's in Colorado Springs, they get back into the bookstore, and he has her parents in Jack the Ripper's lantern, and this is also from Warehouse Wiki. The lantern is, anyone that looks directly into the lantern's beam becomes transfixed and unable to think or move while hypnotized by its glow. If the lantern is suddenly removed, those hypnotized by the light will be killed. However, if the lantern is somehow disarmed, the victims will be left dazed but unharmed. So he has them in the lantern. They have no other choice than to hand over the book and the quill.
But what I can't understand is, why didn't he just get it? He's the one that delivered the book.
Yeah, I don't know if maybe he didn't know where the quill was and he needed them to find it.
Yeah, but if he's so good.
Right, I don't know. I don't know if he needed them to recover both of them, and for some reason he couldn't. They don't really tell us.
Unless he's just letting them know that, hey, this is the game. You're going to be following me for a while.
Yes, it seems like he wanted them to know it was him, but it also seemed like he couldn't do it, so he had to set it up so they could do it.
You hurt my father.
He glimpsed the mind of one of the greatest authors in the world. He'll thank me later.
Oh, he'll be dead later.
What do you want? I want what you risked your lives to get. I've done it myself, but I lack the means.
That one I think is too easy. He could have used somebody else. He used Micah's father, because he brought the book to the bookstore to a person that's going to read the book. So somewhere along the line, there's a connection. He could have found that pen. I'm daggone sure he could have found that pen.
Yeah, I think so too. So I'm not really clear. I think using Micah's father, number one, of course he's going to read the book. But it's a right. family member, so now they know they have to be afraid for their family, not just themselves.
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it was kind of like a two-part threat. Well, a two-part mission. One, he needed them to get the quill for whatever reason. He needed them to do it. And two, so they know that their families are also in danger.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's the way I see it, but I don't know. We're going to pause right here for a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hey, Dud Gramley here from Yeah, That Can't Be Good. If you're a fan of Warehouse 13, it is very likely you're also a fan of Eureka, and if you aren't, you should be. Please join Kim, Vicky, Skip, and myself over at Yeah, That Can't Be Good for an episode-by-episode podcast of all things Eureka. You can listen at EurekaRewatch.com on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. So what do you have in your notes?
I want to say basically almost the same.
Well, I'm sure you have a Pete moment, right?
Yeah, there's always a Pete moment. Oh, yeah. Pete with the chicken wings.
Mrs. B. Oh, hey, I am going to need this recipe. The hot sauce is killer.
Great. Oh, we've got some.
Oh, look at you. Oh, sorry.
Oh, we met Pete.
Well, he's a pip.
But he's already there. He's already having lunch. Because Michael's like, huh? Like, what are you doing here? And, you know, and the mother just doting on him. Because it seems like people seem to dote on boys, it seems.
Absolutely.
But they got to make sure they eat. I know he said something about Michael being, you know, skinny.
Yeah.
But, you know, Pete, man, he's going to eat. And he's just tearing up wings. And Michael tells him, you got sauce on your face.
Yeah.
But I thought it was so cute. He was like, well, I'm here to support you. It's like, well, who gave you the authority? And he's like, me.
Well, yeah, and that was really nice that he went there to support her, because he knew the issues with her family, and he knew, for what they knew, her father was dying.
Mm-hmm.
That's the last they heard. So he knew it would be doubly hard. Number one, her father's dying. Number two, she didn't have the best relationship with him.
Right.
So that was really nice that he came to support her, but I just have to laugh at Micah's mother when she's just has no idea what's going on. And I'm sorry if this is in your notes, but I just thought about it. She says, and who's the little man in the TV?
Yeah. Oh, that was cute.
No, you wait just a minute. I want some answers, Micah. Now, first of all, who's the man in the little TV?
His name is Artie.
And is he a doctor?
No, but...
No, your father belongs in a hospital.
This isn't medical. Mom, this is something else.
And how do you know? You're not a doctor. You protect the president.
Not anymore. I'm still with the government, but I am doing this now.
Not ready to tell him, and Pete's trying to tell her. You need to tell him or tell him, you know, part of it.
Right, something close to the truth. It doesn't have to be the absolute truth, but something that sounds plausible and is not a complete lie.
Just say I'm working undercover for the government.
Right.
I can't speak of the subject.
Right, but we just found out they didn't even know she wasn't guarding the president anymore.
Right, but she was still working for the government.
Right, so they were totally confused about what the heck was going on when they think she's supposed to be guarding the president, and there she is and telling them it's not a medical issue, and people are showing up with buckets of goo, and, you know. Yes, it is the same government agency, but she never told them that she changed jobs.
Right, and she should have. She should have just said, I'm still working for the Secret Service. It's undercover and I can't disclose.
Right.
And that's it.
Right.
Because that's the easy one, you know, but with the relationship that was going on beforehand. So part of it I could understand. I mean, dang, I'd be proud of you working for the Secret Service. You're making bucks. But she didn't feel that way, but, you know, now she does. But I like when her mother told her to take care of Pete.
Because he needs taken care of.
That's my boy.
Yeah.
Take our chicken wings. I was like, Dad, I'm going to like some good chicken wings.
What else you got in your notes?
That's about the same thing other than Pete and his chicken wings. And the only thing I was like, you know, words have power.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. And it just basically was just a happy ending, you know?
Yeah. So far, for them it is, but...
Right.
You know, McPherson's still out there, and now he has the book and the pen for whatever reason he's going to need those.
Yeah, because he's collected items, so what he plans on doing with the items, yeah, we still don't know yet. I still like how Mrs. Frederick just pops in and out, lit it out.
She's pretty much the only thing that scares Artie.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing scares Artie, except for Mrs. Frederick's.
Yeah. Stop doing that. Wait, and you know, he ready, he had Lena, the lemonade, and all of a sudden, there she
is. Right, and he says, what did you do with Lena?
Yep.
I like those two together.
Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it, though.
I like this one, yeah. I mean, I like most of them. There was only one I really didn't like, but this was a good one.
Yeah.
Oh, and we talked about this off-air, but I'm going to talk about it now so other people will know. Our Eureka podcast, EurekaRewatch.com, is now finally on Apple Podcasts. So if you're a Eureka fan and haven't listened yet, go to Apple Podcasts and look for Yeah, That Can't Be Good, and we're there. Finally.
Yay!
Yay. So you don't have anything else?
No, that kind of wraps it all up.
All right. All right, so we will be back with the season one finale already.
Oh, wow.
Next week. So we'll see you later.
All right. Everybody have a good day.
Bye.
Bye.
He used us from the very beginning.
He used me.
Okay, DC, tell us what's next.
Join us next time for season one, episode 12. Make their son goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. See you later.
Hey, this is Doug Gramley reminding you to follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/the13thwarehouse, on Twitter at Eureka Warehouse, on Instagram at Eureka_warehouse, on our website at the13thwarehouse.com, or on Podbean. Theme music for the 13th Warehouse, Reflections in the Mirror, provided by Esther Garcia under their standard license. See you next time in the 13th Warehouses.
And now we're also available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.